How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the HVAC Time Podcast. I've got two pretty awesome guests today. These are two friends of mine, Curtis and Kirk. We're going to be having a fairly interesting, at least I think interesting, conversation. This is actually a conversation we have whenever we just sit at a lunch and get in a restaurant, or I mean, heck, we had our professors from trade school come down, and this is basically the conversation we have, just all the crazy wild things we get into and what I guess keeps us entertained, makes it interesting. How do you want to look at that?
You know, I guess makes it interesting. Yeah.
With that being said, so we'll start with Curtis. Curtis is, well, you're what, 4 years into it? You know, give us a quick bio on you.
Quick bio on me? I mean, I don't know. I came here, like you're talking about the whole skid up. I mean, I've been working at this, went to the PM program. Now I'm doing service. It's all just slowly building into this, growing into this experience. And, like you said, it's a bunch of experiences. I'm not sure, you know, no bio here.
Yeah. Well, you got a solid 4 years in now, right? And you've had a solid year of that, of some hardcore service experience, right? And then prior to that was very heavy kind of apprenticeship style structure. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I went to the, started the whole PMs thing. We started, and then when we started the PMs, it was all just kind of like trying to figure it out. So it was all putting it all together from the get go. And then after there was some structure, and then I played a part in that, you know, for a while until I couldn't have no more fun there. And then they moved me on to other crazy pastures, and where most of these stories began to happen from then.
There you go. All right. So Mr. Kirk, tell us about yourself.
So I've been here at APS for 3 years now. Just like Curtis, came through the PM program. Instead of moving directly over to service like Curtis did, I did about a year and a half of supervising that PM department, and then a couple months ago moved over to the service side.
You want to get into the story of how you got into service?
My supervisor got promoted and said we need someone to fill this spot. So here you go, take it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have a sponsor on this podcast. It is Field Pulse. I've talked about them pretty heavily. They are a great software for helping manage your service business, whether that be an HVAC or any of the other trades. They don't tailor into just one specific. They do cover a spectrum. And they are based here in Texas in DFW, which is fairly local to me. So I appreciate that. I'd rather work with people I know that are local to me and support that side of the industry. If you do still have a fairly small shop, or you're trying to develop your business and you need to really try to expand that, a great investment you can make is in a good software that's going to help you manage that, help your field team better track what they're doing and be more autonomous on their own. The more you can get your team to that state as a small shop, the better off you're going to be. So go check them out. Talk to Michael over at Field Pulse, and they'll be able to take care of you. I'll open up with our first story. My first one is kind of a close call, if you will. But it was so we were down chiller pit. So it's outside of this building. I think they're three story buildings, and there's a single RTAA air cold chiller down in the pit. And we were down there to do some work on one of the, it's actually circuit C, or the third compressor. And we had already done the recovery, and we thought we had the whole system completely flat. Now, we did make a mistake here. We were checking pressure everywhere except for right at the discharge line. So there may have been a little more pressure there than we thought, but ultimately we thought we were being fairly rigorous and the system was safe. And we start backing out the four bolts that hold the discharge line on. And what's crazy about it, and it's weird how gaskets work, because as we're coming out with that flange, the O-ring in there was holding the seal. And we actually got to the point where you could visually see the gap in between the flange and the housing. So honestly, we had no reason to think things weren't okay. So we're going, and I've got I had a chiller apprentice with me at the time. We won't name names. And he's coming out with the bolts, And then that O-ring lets loose. And when that thing let loose, I don't know how much we had, but it was more than it should have been. It just goes. And so the oil that was holding in the compressor housing starts flying out. The whole area got covered, and it was a massive cleanup. But what was crazy about it was his first reaction was to get in there and try to put the bolts back in. Now you got to think, we'd already created about a quarter inch gap on four bolts that are about an inch and eighth head. So you're talking a pretty substantial, it would take you a minute to get those bolts back in there. Even if you did, I don't think that seal is going to close off it at this point. Like it's already blown out. So, you know, his reaction was to fix, not run. And I'm actually up inside the chiller. So I was on the inside in between the coils in the frame. He was on the outside leaning in, and we were trying to tag team this. So I ended up having to tell him, just get your blank out of here, and we got to run. And he was sitting there, and he looked confused, because in his mind, he's thinking, we need to fix this. What he doesn't understand, and this is just where experience comes in, I guarantee he doesn't do this twice, but when you look around us, all the space around us is quickly turning into fog. Now, I'm very confident we didn't have liquid refrigerant still in there, but we still had enough vapor charge. And when you're dealing with, I think those are, I mean, shoot, what, 2.5-inch, 3-inch lines? And while the system said it didn't have any pressure, and we thought we had checked it far enough, you know, we were very confident. Obviously, that was a mistake. Our confidence bit us in the butt, but maybe it's more of arrogance than confidence. But yeah. That was a crazy situation. It took 30 minutes for that pit to air back out enough to where you could actually see through it and go back down in there. And then it took us another probably day to clean all that up and make it all right. That was a pretty crazy experience. I know it's interesting, because if you haven't been through that kind of thing, you know, where does your mind go with that? I mean, because he's not the first time I've ran into something like that. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, in y'all's mind, just trying to put yourself there. What makes you want to stop it versus understanding, get out?
Man, that does remind me of a story that when I first started in PMs, I always wore gloves, especially when handling refrigerant, mostly because I'm terrified of the refrigerant more than anything. And that stems actually from experience in the classroom that I had way back, like in your class in college back in East Texas and all. But I was on the roof, and somebody had blew a Schrader core out of this unit, and they have like these giant line sets, and this whole roof is full of condensers, and it's really cutting loose, I have gloves on, so they're the PM supervisor at the time. This is a long time ago. That's when I first started it, and he's telling me to stop it with the gloves, because I got the gloves. You know, put my hand on it to stop it. I mean, in his mind, it has to be saved. You know, in the same sense of what you're talking about, the guy in the pit. You know, he's like, save. You know, like in my mind, I'm, what is there to save? You know, it's done. Anyway, I gave him the glove because I said no. And then he tried to stop it. And of course that was completely unsuccessful. And, you know, with the burns and all he got from that, you know? So yeah, where does your mind go? You know, I don't know. I'm more of a just, you know, man, it already happened.
You know, going with that, you know, being an apprentice and working on a new piece of equipment, you want to kind of prove yourself a little bit, make sure, you know, you don't break it, but it's hard in the moment to realize what was your fault and what is fixable and what isn't. And immediately you're there to fix and do a repair. And so it's hard sometimes to just break that, I guess, point of safety, I guess. I really don't know how to explain it, but I know I've had a similar situation where a Schrader core blew out, and I had four or five texts just saying, just let it blow, let it go. It's gone, you know, and I'm over there still trying to, you know, fix that stem and get it set. But you know, it's just the mentality that does come with experience. You just got to lose the anxiousness of it, I guess.
I guess that's true. That's a good point of having a desire to want to prove yourself, you know, and so you do just about anything to try to accomplish that. So I guess I could rationalize that. I was, I guess, fortunate enough that by the time I had gotten into any of those like really serious situations, I was already fairly experienced. So my mind wasn't in that same state of reference, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting. What do y'all got? I know both of y'all have seen some pretty interesting things, so throw it at me. What you got?
I mean, I've had one where I've evacuated an entire building due to a burning smell. There was no hot work being performed, but I was replacing belts on a four-story, all these self-contained units, and I was replacing belts. And I was leaving for the day, and I got a call from one of the other senior techs who the engineer was really close with. And he got pretty lit up on that text message, and obviously trickle down effect came down to me. Like, what did you do? And I'm like, I didn't do anything. There was no fire at all. And come to find out that we had been replacing these belts, and they were having tension and startup issues with all these belts anyway. So we'd elected to go to banded belts, and the grooves in between the pulleys had actually started eating away at the bands while they were running, creating a burnt rubber smell that had perpetrated throughout the entire building. And, I had to get back out there and figure out a way to get all this to work. And I must have spent, I don't know, another 2 hours out there that night realizing I had warped belts and all that stuff. And come to find out we had the wrong belts from the get-go, and whoever had been logging these belts was wrong from the start. And that's where I learned to always carry a belt sizing tool. But yeah, evacuated a whole building that night. It was great.
I remember that day. That was a very bad day.
Yeah, there was multiple reasons that one had gone south, but that was cherry on top, I guess.
How many buildings have you evacuated, Curtis? We know is it still on one hand, or are you on multiple hands?
I don't think I've had to have any buildings evacuated. I know I've certainly almost tore them down, and I flooded them and all manner of fun, you know. But like specifically the one that I almost tore down is I think I had noticed that I could hear the bypass wasn't fully closing on this. So it's a condenser water loop on a multi-story building. I don't know, would you call it a high rise, medium rise, whatever. And I think there's like 18 floors. What do you call that? I don't know. Anyway, it's a condenser water loop. It has a bypass valve, so it's either in heating or cooling. And it's for a cooling tower versus the boiler. Anyway, it's a three-way valve. It's a globe valve on a 4-inch copper line. And I'm just trying to adjust it so that when it's bypassing the tower, it's not running over the tower. And so, me as it may, I'm not completely experienced with the valve, and I have it all apart. I have the actuator apart, and I have it down to just a stem and a wrench. And in my mind and my heart, I'm like, there's something that's exciting that's going to happen here when I do this. But I have no frame of reference. So I really don't know. I even tried to set up a camera because I have this sneaking feeling that something cool is going to happen. Anyway, as it goes on, I go to move that stem, and the stem's just free from all the actuator and all its gearing. And I mostly have it all taken apart to understand it. And so I'm moving this valve, and it moves and it moves and it closes, and then it moves back to me, you know, on its own power. And so you can imagine, I don't know if I can flail around on camera and give it fair justice, but it begins to push me in and out, and it's picking up a resonance. So I'm pretty stout, and I got a hold of this thing, and it's moving me, and it's opening and closing and now real fast, like enough that it's throwing me around and I can't stop it. And it's picking up and making a lot of noise. And I look down the line, this long copper line penetrates the wall, the penthouse, and it's jumping down on its mounts. And I look at the side of the building, and it's like it's a brick building, so it's bubbling with the line, this 4-inch copper line that's attached to the globe valve as it is, and it's penetrating the wall. Well, it's doing that like bubbly thing that you see on the demolition videos, and so this is not good, and it's very loud. Anyway, so I try to run into the building, and I'm sure that whoever's seen me clear the line set and into the building, probably thought I should have been in the Olympics, probably two steps across that whole roof. Anyway, because this is not good. Anyway, I go into the building. There's no disconnect for the pump. Not one. There's no lever marked disconnect for pump. The pump's running at this time. What's happening is this. It's what's it called? Water hammer back and forth. Bang, 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 bang. At this point, it's separated some of the mounts from the boiler from the ground, and the boiler's jumping off the ground. Maybe like an inch or something. I don't know. It's just dust and stuff, and it's pretty chaotic. And I finally get to the VFD of the pump, and of course I press off, and it's probably like a 30 second ramp down on it. So all this just gets to slowly play down in front of my eyes. And it's about 15 seconds later, I get a call from the engineer. What's going on up there? I just had the emergency shut down on the plant. You might want to have to turn off all the water source heat pumps. Yeah, that was utter chaos. Utter chaos.
Yeah, I remember that day. You came in to tell that story. You were, yeah.
And this, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, is why to this day I've still tried to convince this guy to just put a GoPro on his chest. Don't even edit it. Just hit record. It could be 2 hours long. Just put it online. It would be you find yourself in some pretty epic situations. I'll tell you.
It truly is. And I don't even know how much without me running around doing the pantomime situation, you can really get a grasp of how intense that situation is. And I do tend to find myself in these pretty intense situations. I'm not exactly sure how that comes to be. Suppose it keeps me young. I don't know.
Young or on the edge of a heart attack, one of the two.
Yeah, one of those. Mental acuity for sure.
Yeah, I think the closest I've come to like a hardcore building evacuation, this was at a previous company I was working with. And what was funny about it is it was the owner's son. We were working on some self-contains, and I think we were doing PMs actually. And he was there, you know, training and getting some experience with me. It was a train self-contain, and they've got the liquid line service valves right there below where the filter dryers are in the blower cabinet there on the left side of the unit behind the control panel. And so I'm in the control panel going through the electrical section, and I had him moving the gauges around and taking pressures. And we had, if I remember, we had just finished taking readings on one circuit, and we were getting ready to move to the next. Well, all of a sudden, I just hear this, whoosh, and you can smell it. You can smell the refrigerant. And my mind immediately went to something just ruptured. And so I slam the control panel door closed, and I come running around to him to see what's going on. And he's just standing there panicked, you know, and he was still very early. So I'm not necessarily faulting him. Honestly, maybe I was putting him in a position a little too soon. Anyway, regardless of my decisions on that.
Putting someone in a position they can't handle? What?
Nah. So, yeah, he's just standing there, just staring at this, just dumbfounded. He doesn't know what to do with it, and he's got the high side gauge in his hand. And I look over, and that's exactly what's going on. The service wrench is still on the stem, but there's just this stream of just liquid refrigerant just spewing straight out, hardcore. And this circuit had just been running, so it was under high pressure. It didn't take a few seconds after that. All the smoke alarms start going off in the building. We start fogging the whole room out. I was able to get there quick enough, and I grabbed it. Thankfully, it hadn't started to freeze yet, because that'll be what can happen is you have something like that, and if you don't get to it quick enough, that whole assembly will start to freeze. And I've snapped off a liquid line service valve before because I let it freeze. And I got too aggressive with it, trying to see if I could break the stem from it of being frozen. And I broke the stem, just not the way I wanted to break the stem. That was a fun day, too. Yeah, that'll happen if you've never had that. Anyway, so I've able to get to the seat. But it was too late. By that time, fire alarms going off everywhere. Engineers are calling. Everybody's freaking out. You know, all, as far as they know, it was a normal day. There wasn't supposed to be, because all, you know, a lot of those commercial buildings, the management is given a heads up when there's going to be any kind of fire test. So when there's a fire alarm going off, and especially when you start to get this funny smell and there's a little bit of fog coming, and the people that were on the same floor that we were on all of a sudden hear this weird noise that normally isn't there, and they know that we're there working on it. You know, there's a whole lot of things that goes through supervisors and management's minds of, okay, maybe this isn't a fake scenario. And yeah, about an hour later, most of it aired out enough. We were able to reset the fire panel. Cause what actually ended up holding us up on that was a lot of it got trapped in the ductwork. So we had to let the ductwork dissipate to the point where the smokes would clear, and then we could get the whole system back online. But yeah, we put the whole, I don't think we had a complete evacuation on that one, but they were in progress for sure. That was a interesting day. He learned not to, what he learned that day was make sure you close the valve first. Like, there's no Schrader in that at all.
And even play with it a little bit. Make sure, double sure.
Yeah, make sure. Exactly. How long did it take the engineers to understand the situation and calm down from that?
Well, in terms of understanding, thankfully we had a really good relationship with that customer. They didn't ask too many questions. It was just a pretty simple, hey, we had a mishap up here with one of the refrigerant lines. I fixed it. Just false alarm kind of thing. They rolled with it. They didn't really give us too much flack over it. But it was just kind of, frustrating. And the customer or the tenants that were in that building weren't super touchy, thankfully. It was a pretty chill building overall. So that made the whole scenario a lot less hectic, for sure.
Yeah, I know if you've got like a law office or something like that, they're not as understanding. They might have had a deposition going or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That particular building you're talking about, that one, did it have a separate water-cooled condensers and separate air handlers? I think I know what building you're talking about. Did it have the pneumatic controls associated with it? Named after a bank. Anyway, I think I pulled a cap off there when I first started at that place.
Oh, no, it wasn't that one.
Okay. I pulled the service valve. It was like an old Carlisle compressor with the valve open off there too, but I was able to close it down pretty fast. That's when I got to learn about the same sort of setup. You know, you got to, those things, you got to make sure they're closed.
Yep. You only learn that lesson once.
Front seated, back seated, whatever you want to call it. It's got to be closed.
Well, I mean, the other one that comes off the top of my mind is one that's a little more recent that you've had a series of videos on after the initial diagnosis. So, I remember going out to a job site to assist another tech do a repair on some YCIV chillers, and we had finished, I think it was the economizer solenoid or valve we were rebuilding that day, and we got it all up and running by the end of that Friday. So this particular building had three YCIV chillers on the roof, and we had finished getting their seventh circuit back up and running. Their eighth one was down for some more repairs. So we leave that weekend, and I think it's Sunday night, I get a call from the engineer, and he mentions that he had just placed a call to the on-call tech, and that their chiller had gone down, and they have a server room that's also chilled water coils handling the server room, and their server room starting to heat up, and they're not able to really maintain temp. And he needs me to come out there because he wasn't too familiar with the on-call tech, and this particular building is, you know, they've got their the guys that they want to go to. And so he calls me, and so I say, yeah, I'll head out there. And so we get out there, and I believe the specific call that I received was the chiller exploded. And I thought that was kind of, you know, a little bit of exaggeration there, and I was like, no, it didn't explode, but you know, maybe he's just trying to playing off the importance there of this call. And so I get out there, and I meet the on-call tech out there, and we go up to the roof, and I see it's wet on the ground. It hadn't rained, but it's wet on the ground. And so the first thing I think of is, you know, it's a YCIV chiller. So maybe it's got that VSD coolant line had ruptured, you know. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's the problem. Maybe we'll just try to find a way. And so then I slip. I ate it bad. I'm like, oh, well, that's probably not coolant. And then I feel it around, and it's oil. It's refrigerant oil. And oh, goodness, it really did explode. And so, okay, well, we'll cancel this. We'll go try to turn on the other chiller. Well, the other chiller doesn't run for whatever reason. They've got other problems. The compressor starts up and immediately shuts off. Oh, crap. Yeah, so come to find out later that Monday when I finally got back out there that the initial call was for the discharge line vibrating, cracking, losing all of its charge, spraying refrigerant all over the place. I think there's 240 pounds of refrigerant all launched inside of this cabinet where they've got the sound dampeners on, so it was really confined. One of the compressors had locked up on the back of that same chiller, and then the third compressor, which I think there's multiple videos on, that's the one that with the discharge line started freezing up. So that was all sorts of various diagnoses, from small repairs to large repairs to full-on compressor replacements. That was a saga, and that was what, 2 days of just trying to get that one compressor just to start, and ultimately failed.
Basically, yeah, two full days. It was a half day the first day because we spent the other half of the day kind of just getting the whole loop settled out, because that's part of what was happening there. The loop couldn't catch up because the building automation was constantly cycling the chillers back and forth because neither of the chillers could catch up. Instead of just locking the whole system in and just telling it stop, just stop, try to run, you know, and that was part of what the chillers were doing too, was the chillers were trying to stage up, but then these other circuits that were failing weren't necessarily locking out. Some of them were, but some of them weren't. And so because they weren't locking out, and the building engineers kept resetting the chiller control, so every time it did lock out after it tripped so many times, it would just, they would reset it anyway, not knowing any better. Most of the time that wasn't a problem, but for this very specific scenario it was. And it just created this whole feedback loop cycle of trip, reset, and it, yeah.
Yeah, they went from 7 circuits running on Friday down to 3 or 4 Monday morning for just various failures. And I couldn't believe that amount of, and it wasn't even all in the same chiller. It was 2 different chillers. All, yeah, it was, things went to hell pretty quickly there.
Yeah, that was a rough one. That was a really rough one. Huh?
I don't know. Just a bunch of cascading failures. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
not a whole lot. I mean, yeah.
Well, this sounds like another one I've got going. So I'm pushing. I've done several videos at the property, but I'm pushing. I'm 2 years in on the project, and it's just, it's one thing after another. You know, to give an example, the most recent thing was the supply air on one of the buildings on the Aon unit. I mean, it just, you're talking inches worth of a gap all the way around half of the supply air duct. And that was actually one, Curtis, you had actually gone out on and had talked to the balancing people, and they were the ones that were like, hey, you know, we're trying to certify this building, but, you know, what your unit says you're moving and what we show you're moving aren't the same thing. And yeah, that ended up being absolutely true. It's one of those where what was kind of challenging about it was when we first got brought in for a second opinion, they had already been working for at least a year, 6 months to a year prior to that, with a actual consultant and a consulting engineer and the installing contractors and everybody else. And they never told us that though. So they had pushed it to us as though these other people had already tried to fix it, and they were basically having them take a back seat, if you will. And we were the next step to try to come in and just figure something out. So this is where I got personally involved in, and have stayed involved in it because of the complexity of the problems. And it all comes down to install vast majority of it, install and TI buildouts. The base building design worked fine, but once the tenants actually started building out the space and the other engineers that came in and tried to build on top of the original engineer's design have just utterly butchered it. And then they've had really poor install overall. There's so many install issues that it's just led to this whole, it's legitimately a true saga. I mean, we're only just now, a couple of years into it, for my part of it, getting to where we're starting to see the building even somewhat function anywhere close to what it was meant to be. And we still got quite a bit to do out there. And it's one of those you think kind of going into it where, well, this probably won't be that big a deal. But once you get into it and you start diving into all the nuances, well, there's a pretty good reason why they've had several teams of people, including actual engineers, or at least the way I think of that is people who have degrees in engineering. The fact that they've all struggled this deep into it. And that was another one of those kind of humbling scenarios, at least for me, because I'm sitting back now and I'm just like, you know, I kind of have a different opinion on taking on some of those projects. I might want to ask a few more questions next time, but what can you do?
You live and learn.
Yeah. I mean, they pay the invoice, so there's that.
But, yeah, that's the main thing there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually something that I don't know. I think I see some guys struggle with is, where's the dividing line between, okay, we're here to do what we can and they pay the invoice. So we're going to just keep going. And where do we start to draw the line of, okay, we just got to stop here kind of thing. You know, that's something I know that I struggle with for sure.
Right. Same thing you talked about earlier, proud of trying to do the job. You got to, exactly. You know, basically yep. Prove yourself to nothing with mostly yourself. Yeah, I got at that same place. Have probably the most challenging low voltage short to date that I've had to try to trace down on one of those AON units. Yeah, and that's like one of the few trophies I've kept was that one segment of actuator motor wire. I don't know what to call it really, but yeah, that one was like, is this really the career path for me? You know, am I going to be able to do this? I can't find a low voltage short in this air conditioner here. Yeah. Eventually I found it through attrition and what have you. Yeah.
Well, like kind of walk us through that, because that was the one that it was shortened on the enthalpy wheel, right? And so the enthalpy wheel was spinning. And if you don't know, the enthalpy wheel has sections to it. And so there's what, like there's four basic sections or three sections. And so it only for a split second, of the enthalpy wheel's rotation every several seconds, does it actually have a chance to come into contact with metal when it's up against the wheel, right? Because otherwise you're touching the, I don't know that it's true desiccant, but the fill material on the enthalpy wheel, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure wherever it is. Yeah, that one, I don't know. I mean, I just eventually had to, yeah, it was, I went through the whole thing, you know, I don't even know how to begin to start because like you say, it was impossible to find. And it was like the last place I finally just started, chasing down every square inch of wire that was low voltage. And, it was probably like the last 3 foot of wire that was on the very last actuator, you know, that I would have came to with on that series. Cause, if you look at the schematics, you know, you see it has it all comes to one spot, and it's not exactly clear how you're going to isolate each individual area. And when you do isolate each area, you have, you know, all the various boards, nearly impossible actually, just isolate. And, you know, eventually I did get it narrowed down to a certain, all right, so it's this section of the, whatever. Anyway, I don't really know how to explain no more than that. But yeah, no, I eventually found that it just virtue of physically checking the wires. And it was in the very last section in the very last cabinet to look. And it was pressed up in between the enthalpy wheel and the cabinet and then whatever, you know, adhesive clip that they use has just come apart. You know, and I think those Aeons, they're not doing great as far as who put them together. You got videos on those.
Yeah, well, you know, I think about that scenario and just how literally insane that would have been, because I can picture it. You've got a wire, because I remember the picture you sent me. You've got a wire dangling in the middle of this cabinet, and for half a second, every 5 seconds, it makes shorting contact, and that's it. You've got half a second every 5 seconds to physically read the short, and that's it. And I remember us having that phone conversation, and just this, you kept getting this random reading, and we kept catching it. And I'm just like, dude, there's something there.
I would have thought my meter broke.
How do you put A to B? Because it would be there and it'd go away. And a lot of times that could happen. It'd just be some weird thing in your meter. Right. And you almost question, like, is this a meter thing? And, yeah, that was I'll give you kudos for that. That was one heck of a troubleshoot. That would have given anybody a run for their money.
Yeah, I don't keep trophies. That's the only trophy that I have so far. So yeah, that was the one that kicked my ass pretty good. Yeah. There's I don't know. Immediately transition into another chaotic and terrible situation. Much more so than that. You know, you got a we were talking about fire already. Floods. Yeah, I was top of another building, and I had been, I guess, just going to story time mode. I guess, I've been going on this retrofitting on an Ajax boiler for another high rise downtown. All these new controls, and so. This is a boiler that I had spent a lot of time trying to get a wiring diagram for, so that I could, you know, reverse engineer and then put the new equipment in, because, you know, more modern anyway. So I spent a lot of time, I guess, meaning to say all that, I spent a lot of time. I drew out the diagram, you know, try to make all this happen. I was at the final end of this thing, so I spent a lot of energy. So I'm replacing the wells. The thermal wells and on the boiler, and it's getting to the end of the day, and so there's another boiler that needs to come on, and I've had this system open. The engineer, he wants this other boiler to run, so what I've got going on here is one boiler that I've gotten taken apart. I got the thermal wells out, and I have the isolation valve to the boiler closed. So the isolation valve is just, you know, Blimo actuator on a valve, and the crank doesn't open it. And so I forget the exact setup of how this series of events took place, but so I take the motor off the actuator. I'm gonna take the actuator motor off the shaft. You know, I take the little nut off and I use a pipe wrench to close it. And so now I'm working on the, you know, I'm working on the boilers closed, you know, I got the thing open, blah, blah, blah. The guy wants to come. So I take it and I'm trying to work the air out of the system. I turn the pumps on to get the other boiler running, get flow back on the building. So I'm in my mind, I'm running the pumps for a little bit. And then I'm trying to watch for, make sure there's flow. And then I turn them off and I'm just checking. And then eventually I start building pressure and I hear whistling. And I'm like, okay, cool, we're getting the air out, like, you know, this is the idea. And then it's just like, I don't know, because my back is turned to the boilers, but it's just the guys are behind me. I don't know what sparked my attention, whether it's you know, there's a 1-inch hole, whether it is the well that sits in, and now this is a geyser. The boiler I was just working on is the, somehow the actuator has come alive and opened the valve, and all this water is coming out of the boiler. It's in such pressure that it's shooting and touching the roof, which is probably 15 foot in the air. And then it's just like a flat shot, just water on the roof. I don't know.
Except probably. You're in a penthouse. You're not in an actual roof though, right?
Right. I'm in a penthouse. I'm on top of a building. You know, it's a the lawyer's office is right below me on the 26th floor. I'm like, this is not a good situation. Yeah, I'm in the penthouse. What they call the penthouse is where all the mechanical room on the roof, and there's water coming out of here in the most fierce way. And so I look around, and there's valves, but not a single one has a handle, and there's no handles nowhere. And like I said, I've had to take this motor off, and I've closed it with a pipe wrench. And so this isn't the crank's not going to work. And this is just water shooting out. At some point in all this, I catch myself running back and forth, and like I yell for help, but not like help. And it's like kind of comes out as a grumble. And I'm coming apart. And I realized that if anybody's going to come to help, that's going to be me, and that's why I'm there. So eventually, all right, so I collect myself out, and I'm just standing in front of this boiler, and it's shooting water out still, and I'm getting soaked. And there's probably 4 inches of water on the ground at this point, and I look down, and I see the old thermal wells on the ground, and it wasn't a box, but now it's all scattered about. And so I just pick it up, and I just into the hole, and I twist it, and all the water stops, of course, now I got to call the engineer and tell him, yeah, there's flooding happening. This is like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, probably. And now we got 5 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever. You got to, now we're spending until dark trying to clean up water.
Calling ServPro.
No, yeah, actually, I don't know. Yeah, I think Coast Surf probably got involved. I mean, the engineer was super cool about it. He's like, most of it came down to the mechanical rooms and stuff. I was not too much damage to the, lawyers that are occupying the top floor of this IRISE building downtown, there. Anyway, it was, it's just, what do you do? You have no bearing. No, you just got to figure it out.
You know, what's terrible about that story is it's just as funny every single time you hear it as the first time.
But it's even funnier because those valves not holding and doing what they're supposed to happened to another tech, not what, 2 months ago. And the exact same scenario on the exact same building.
So I've gotten the restoration bill twice. Yes, I'm fully aware.
If you turn that pump on, that operates that valve. Just so anybody else goes out there, now they know.
Yeah, man, you and those 4 o'clock stories, man.
Yeah, it's always 4 o'clock.
Not as drastic as flooding a building, but, putting together units after washing coals at 4 o'clock, trying to re-drill holes that have all been tapped out. And, one of the apprentices goes straight into the coil with one of those self-tappers at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That particular apprentice had a knack for letting it loose at 4 o'clock. Now, I promise you, he meant well. I do. I hope. I think. I also watched him try to kill himself. He's holding this unit, this door. He's taking the door off. It's got it's ceiling grid. He's got the metal door rested against his chest, onto the grid, onto the unit. He's holding it. He's taking it off, he's setting it down to rest it so that he can start working. And all my mind sees is a heater, some fuses, and a direct path to his heart. And I stop, what are you doing, Yeah, he shorted it out too, that's the thing, but it shorted it out on the ceiling grid. That's what saved him. Yeah. not funny.
OSHA, if you've been listening, you can turn it off now.
Man, yeah, 4 o'clock though. He had to use anyway. Yeah, I've almost been electrocuted myself though. It's like I'm pretty sure I was electrocuted or some sort of crazy carpal tunnel experience that everybody seems to believe, which I'm.
Hey,
I'm probably on the.
It happened to one other person. I know the story you're talking about. It happened to one other person a little bit after that. I don't know if you know that.
No.
They did end up figuring it out. I forget exactly what the specific cause was, but it happened a second time, and they figured out what was causing it. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, yeah, that was also when I first started in, and one of my fears is death, so I'm pretty vigilant. I try to remain, you know, may not sound it with my extra, my insanity, but I've dealt with that my whole life, so I'm pretty vigilant. Try to stay vigilant against the death and what have you. Anyway, I remember it was at this contract, and you know, it's like PTSD on that place. I got nothing but bad things. Anyway, I'm climbing up this ladder, and it's a water source heat pump. It's above the ceiling grid. It's been built out. This water source heat pump sits across the wall, you know, in such a way as that it's not going to be easy to get to. Like, most people would probably say we're not getting to it. So, but I'm being, anyway, I got somebody down there. So I moved the ceiling grid. I'm cautious. I'm watching. I'm looking. I wedge myself up in there. And as soon as I get wedged up in there, you see on my right shoulder or whatever, there's the top of the wall that there's a build out to the wall on my right. There's conduit and the structure to the building. And it's, you know, I push up on the right and then I grab on the left kind of with my shoulder. And mind you, I'm watching the unit. I don't want to get hit by nothing. And then I get stuck. And as soon as I put my arm over the structure, and now I'm getting electrocuted. And I can see down, and the guy who's spotting me is just talking. And he's looking off in left field, probably checking out some office lady or something. I don't know, but he just won't shut up. And I'm trying to yell. And it's everything I got. And I'm like, this isn't good. And so I start going plan B. I'm going to kick the ladder out. And so that's the stage that I'm at. When he noticed
such detail with me before, by the way.
What?
I don't think you've told it in this much detail before.
No, I don't know.
I've got the synopsis version. This is my first time hearing all of these details. So anyway, go ahead. Okay.
Do you want me to continue? Anyway,
we're here.
I'm gonna kick this ladder out from him. Well, he notices is this going on, and you know, to have him tell it later that he was about to do the same thing. He was about to sweep the ladder out too. And it was at that time that I'm still trying to yell, and I get the yell out. And so, of course, what comes out is like some guttural, you know, nonsense, you know, because I suppose whatever it was gave up, the breaker tripped, whatever it was, you know. I didn't go back up in that hole ever again. I know we did PMs out there for how long, and I sat there and looked at that thing. It's not worth it, you know. And you're saying other people went out. I remember other people like went up directly behind me, and they couldn't find anything. And it's just a massive tangled of web wires and old, you know, everything. So it's no telling. There was wires that I suspect that were old light wires that were dangling from the actual, you know, the floor above you. And I think that they touched my head, and this was, you know, I think whatever, they touched my head when I reached over there and pushed up with, and that's what, you know, completed the circuit across me.
Well, and it was something like that because, we looked multiple times because obviously that's a major hazard. We need to figure out what's going on there. So we had a couple of different people look, and the last time, it got one of the guys, almost the same exact story. It was just climbing up, reaching up, grabbed the wrong thing, and just lit him up hard. And I think it was something to do with the lighting and some of the receptacles, or it was something along that. But they did end up figuring out there was a short, and they got it, as far as I'm aware, they got it resolved. When you've shared that story with me before, you've spared a couple of those details. I guess that guy's not here anymore either. So there's that. But
right.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think probably the most dramatic, I say dramatic, I don't know, maybe that's not the best way to put it. For sure, the one that gave me the biggest heart sink, and I was actually, it's perfect. You can go see this moment in a video. This was one of the It's kind of a vlog style troubleshoot video I did on a CVHE. I think it was a CVHE, but the MCC main tripped on this building. So the call was coming in because the chiller was surging and they had some other chiller issues and there was just a lot going on in this plant. And this plant served some federal stuff. I won't be too specific to give it away, but it served some really important things. So, I'm up there and I just got the chiller back on. They'd had it off until I got there and I'm sitting there and I'm watching everything's coasting up, doing its thing, and it's running fine. And I'm just standing there watching this chiller and you can see it in the video. I'm watching the readings. All of a sudden the entire plant, we're talking three cooling towers, three chillers total, a dozen pumps or just shy of a dozen pumps, like all of this plus boilers, everything goes dead silent instantly. And I'm just standing there just stunned. And knowing what the facility serves and some of the issues we've had, I'm that's the closest to legitimate panic I think I've probably ever felt as a technician. Like, I've gotten into some pretty hairy ones, but I've usually been able to keep my composure as something I think I do fairly well. But this was one where it challenged that composure pretty hard. And I remember, you can see me in the video, they had a boiler company there because they had some high-end work trying to get done. And so we had brought in, experts, if you will, to handle that specific piece of it because they were a little bit older boilers. And I lean over, that guy makes eye contact with me. I look at him. We both look at each other like, what did you do? Kind of thing. And that's when I realized, like, okay.
Why'd you do this?
Something just happened. And what made it worse is, the chiller I'm on is on an upper deck. So I go down to the lower deck into the main plant where most everything is happening, and it's dead silent. I've never heard dead silent ever at this facility. It doesn't actually stop that way. And that's when the heart sink went from sunk to sunken. Like, it just, my gut hit the floor. Oh my God, what is going on?
Was there any like bang or anything when it happened, or just like immediate from chiller sounds to cooling tower sounds to just silence?
Not a thing. Yes, exactly what it was. It was just everything was perfectly normal. Everything at the chiller was perfectly normal. Everything was just as it should have been. Even my readings were fine. Just chiller shuts down. My display goes blank. I hear the cooling tower cycle down. The pump stop. Just all in one instant. Just dead.
And I have a story. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
So I go down into the MCC electrical room and I'm looking around and it doesn't stand out to me. So none of my breakers, none of my stuff is tripped on the main panel. I'm not looking at the actual main itself. So we did eventually get an electrician out there and they were going through it. And what it ended up being, I wasn't a part of it because I'm not an electrician, but they had had the main replaced for the MCC panel itself. They'd had the whole main assembly replaced, or at least rebuilt to some degree, something like that. And apparently there are different trip algorithms into this little controller that they put into there. And they had the algorithm set to be a little too sensitive. So technically falsely tripped. I'm not sure. I think the plant did that one more time. So after that happened, they questioned, okay, maybe it was just a false thing. They reset it. They got the MCC back online and I went through, cause to do that, I shut down the whole MCC wall and it went through one by one and got everything back on. And then, made sure the whole plant was functioning, and it turned into an entire day ordeal. It was stressful. Anyway, they I wasn't there for the next one, but I remember the engineer called me. It's like, hey, this just happened again. And through what I was told later, that's what they ended up deciding was that algorithm. They made this some whatever adjustments to it that they needed to make. And sure enough, I think that has fixed it since then. But it's just one of those where you've already got a chiller, you know it's surging. You've already got these issues going. And something that should have never happened, you know, in your mind, all of a sudden, like it's just one of those where you're standing there and you don't touch anything. You literally didn't touch a thing. All you did was just watch it, and the whole thing just dies.
I'm going to get blamed for this first spot.
I think I was out at that same property right after the Snowmageddon, the whatever happened a couple years ago. I was out there with one of our senior techs, and we were doing an assessment on the building, as we did all those buildings, you know, after we came back to work from a few days off. And one of the things we're checking is, you know, there was significant water damage in the bottom mechanical room of this building. And we were, you know, checking everything, ohming everything out, making sure nothing was shorted or anything like that. And so we start throwing, you know, breakers to turn things back on. And I remember he went to go turn on the chillers, you know, from that control cabinet. And he asked me and the old service supervisor to stand outside, you know, just in case. And, you know, we're outside, and next thing we hear is just this loud, to me, it just sounded like a cannon, you know, just bang, and everything silent, you know, nothing, you know, and your heart just sinks because you know there's somebody in there that you're doing that. And thankfully we see the guy running out of the room, you know, just, you know, pants probably 3 feet behind him because he's going so quick. But yeah, it just sinks because, you know, you're working and you're just trying to maintain everything. And yes, I think it was the same building.
Yeah, that's one of those perfects, just kind of the title of this whole thing, you know, the things we get into. It's crazy. Well, I do want to say, we'll wrap this up. We've got a pretty good time frame going here. That and I got sheep to get to. But be safe, guys. You know, we've touched on some pretty crazy, pretty bad, you know, situations, and it's really critical that we are safe. If OSHA is listening, I'm sorry. This is all in good fun. We didn't mean it. We tried. But in reality, this is something that you're going to have to kind of learn how to manage. You know, we can try to be as safe as physically possible in every possible way, and there's still going to be accidents. You know, and I think something that I've learned recently, one of our guys, his family is a close tie to like underwater welders, for example, and they have such a extremely high mortality rate. And he was telling me, you know, I haven't fact checked this, but, you know, according to him, the reason that the number one cause for underwater welders deaths is their hose man up top. You know, whatever happens, he doesn't realize it. He's not paying attention. Doesn't matter. The hose ends up getting kinked in some possible way, and that welder has no possible ability to get back to the surface before he just suffocates and drowns. And so it's something as simple as that, right? We're dealing with electrical. Curtis, that was a very serious scenario.
I live with that. Oh, I live with that constantly. Yeah, that very thing. Yeah, that's no BS. That's no all fun and games we're at to laugh about. But yeah, that seriously affected everything that went forward from there.
For those of us who've lived through these things, you know, at some point we do have to just kind of look back, and we can come together as community and share and try to find some kind of positive out of it. And I think that's what like this conversation is at the end of the day. We're trying to find some kind of positive in a very negative situation that was going on for us. But you really do have to be careful. It doesn't take much. But in some of these cases, it's like the whole refrigerant thing. Some of these things you're going to have to learn. You're going to have to live through to learn. I think the critical goal there is, while you're living through it, try to make sure you live through it in the process. Because I guess, yeah, some people don't. But anyway, well, I appreciate you guys coming on. This was a good chat. I'd like to do more guest talks. I'd like to do more of this. This is episode 7, and you know, it's been just me yelling at a camera the last 6, or I say camera. I guess I've got the actual regular audio going. Just me yelling into the void of space, if you will, last 6 times. So it feels nice to actually sit down and have a conversation. So appreciate it. But with that, appreciate everybody. If you are looking for some tools, give True Tech Tools a look. They're a really good group, really good company. They'll do a lot to take care of you. And you know, if you need 8% off HVAC time, promo code will take care of that for you. And don't forget to check out Field Pulse in the process. And just reach out to Michael or Gabe. Gabe's the CEO over there. Really solid folks. And they also have their own podcast now, if you're ever interested. Just very trades oriented. They didn't pay me to say that. I'm throwing it out there. I've been listening to it. This last one they had with The Void is actually a pretty good one. I really appreciated that. Anyway, I'll catch you on the next one. We'll see you guys.